Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Pop Masculinities, The Politics of Gender in 21st Century Popular Music, by Kai Arne Hansen, narrated by James R. Cheatham. Introduction. Like Pinocchio. You can get so much criticism being in a boy band. In the beginning, it was manufactured, there's no doubt about it. But it's like Pinocchio. He was manufactured, but he turned into a real boy. Nick Carter. In the documentary film Backstreet Boys, Show 'Em What You're Made Of, Nick Carter likens the development of the Backstreet Boys' career to the story of Pinocchio, the wooden marionette who magically comes to life. Pinocchio is the protagonist of Carlo Collodi's children's novel, The Adventures of Pinocchio, which details the exploits of the puppet after he is made from a wooden block by the impoverished woodcarver Geppetto. The story was famously adapted into an animated film by Walt Disney Productions in 1940, which led Pinocchio, whose nose grows longer every time he tells a lie, to become the most familiar figure of artifice and deception in Western culture. In both Collodi's original story and Disney's adaptation, Pinocchio dreams of becoming a real boy. In Disney's version, after proving himself brave, truthful, and unselfish, the wooden puppet does indeed achieve his dream. At the end of the movie, he magically turns human. By comparing the Backstreet Boys to Pinocchio, Carter addresses the common criticism that boy bands are manufactured groups without any semblance of musical talent or skill. It just feels so unnecessary, wrote The Independent about the Backstreet Boys' 2019 album, DNA, exemplifying the outspoken disapproval that has long offset boy bands' immense commercial success. Principal among the accusations directed toward boy bands is the idea that they are not real. Not real musicians, not real men. Like Pinocchio, Carter expresses a desire for transcending the constraints of inauthenticity to be recognized as real. In Carter's case, this entails measuring up to the expectations placed on men and musicians in the popular music domain. The comparison offers a point of entry for addressing how representations of gender in popular culture, found in children's books as well as in pop music, are intertwined with a broad range of cultural, historical, and social discourses that shape both their production and reception. Looking more closely at the similarities and differences between the story of Pinocchio and the cultural narrative surrounding boy bands, it is significant that Collodi's Pinocchio is portrayed as far less innocent than what is conceded by Disney's popularized version of the story. According to Richard Wunderlich and Thomas J. Morrissey, the Disney film is influenced by earlier adaptations of The Adventures of Pinocchio that proliferated in the United States in the late 1930s, in which Geppetto's motivation for carving Pinocchio, the nature and extent of the puppet's rebelliousness, the relative harshness of the larger world, and the significance of Pinocchio's metamorphosis are altered. Collodi's Pinocchio is depicted as impudent and unruly, and he is harshly criticized for his greed, laziness, and disobedience. Likewise, the world that he inhabits is cruel and dangerous. In the first version of the story, published in the Italian children's magazine Giornale per I Bambini during 1881, Pinocchio does not transform into a real boy at all. Rather, he dies a gruesome death at the hands of his two enemies, the fox and the cat, who tie a noose around his neck and hang him from a tree. The looming presence of potential catastrophe that characterizes Collodi's tale about Pinocchio throughout is rooted in the social and cultural circumstances of Italy at the time the story was written. Addressing changing attitudes toward children in late 19th and early 20th century Italy, Carl Ibsen describes an upsurge of concerns about delinquent youth, vagabonds, beggars, street children, and criminals, on the one hand, and an emerging public and political opinion that Italian society had a responsibility to care for its unfortunate, mistreated, and poor children on the other. Highlighting a dangerous child-child-in-danger dialectic, Ibsen understands Collodi's Pinocchio as the archetype of the child who is at once endangered by the modernizing world in which he lives, and himself a danger produced by that world. The hanging of Pinocchio in the first version of the story serves as a warning about what happens to misbehaving children who attempt to subvert the social order. While his ultimate success of becoming a real boy in the extended version testifies to a belief in the possibility of turning even recalcitrant idlers into ragazzini per bene, proper boys. Vis-a-vis the equivocal status of children in Italian society and culture at the time, Ibsen views the story of Pinocchio as an index of public anxiety if ever there was one. Returning to Carter's comparison of Pinocchio and the Backstreet Boys, I would suggest that the widespread denigration of boy bands represents a similar index of the public anxieties surrounding these groups' masculinities. Just as the misbehaviors of Pinocchio were at odds with the moral standards of his time, so too have the masculinities of boy bands grated against prevailing expectations of gender in the late 20th and early 21st centuries. In a study of the derisive sentiments directed toward boy bands, Mark Duffett shows that they have commonly been dismissed as overrated, pointless, and talentless manufactured groups of young, insincere, probably gay men who primarily rely on their looks to peddle cheesy or sacrilegious cover versions to legions of seduced fans. Such disdainful descriptions characterized by homophobia and misogyny frequently infer masculine inadequacy from what is perceived as inauthentic musical practices. This reflects a more general resentment toward the culturally feminized domain that is the pop mainstream, whose status as a manufactured mass culture is tied up with notions of ephemerality, superficiality, and worthlessness. A primary cause for ridicule is found in boy bands' often conspicuously innocent and harmless images, constructed through carefully choreographed dance routines, matching outfits, and musical cliches, which distance them from traditionally masculine traits such as authority, independence, and risk-taking. As grown men stuck in an innocuous version of adolescence, they appear further removed from dominant gender ideals than even Pinocchio. The mischievousness of the puppet corresponds with conduct that is naturalized as masculine, demonstrated by the common use of phrases such as "boys will be boys," to suggest that rough, risky, or improper behavior is to be expected from boys and men. As boy bands fail to convincingly exhibit such behaviors, the phrase "boys will be boys" instead comes to imply a lack of masculinity in the sense that boys will never become men. Ironically, the wooden puppet in some ways displays a more widely accepted form of masculinity than boy bands do, for which he is also rewarded with a human form in the later version of the story. Where Pinocchio's transition from wooden puppet to real boy is fairly straightforward, magic involvement notwithstanding, for boy bands and other male pop singers, the criteria for authentication are much more diffuse. At this point, I want to propose that critical dismissals of boy bands not only reveal much about the gender norms that these groups are seen to transgress, but also direct attention toward the complex negotiations that characterize both the performance and policing of masculinity in pop music more broadly. The perceived identities of artists are deeply implicated in the pleasures and displeasures derived from engaging with musical expressions in their many forms. Recognizing this opens up numerous avenues for contemplating the distinctly musical ways in which masculinity as a concept exerts influence across a broad range of contexts. In relation to the ever-evolving conventions associated with genre and style, musical gestures and performance theatrics feed into the representation of masculinity in ways that activate ideas about gender, sexuality, race, ethnicity, class, age, and many other factors. It follows that the sonic styling, visual iconography, and general self-presentation of pop artists amount to declarations of human agency that gain their significance in relation to various cultural and social fields. Expressing oneself through music is an act that is rife with performative capacity, as are the acts of listening, of interpreting, and of passing judgment on others. And here we arrive at a central premise for what follows, namely that the aesthetic expressions of pop music, as well as the responses they generate, are bound up with the sheer messiness of the cultures, societies, and human activities from which they arise. In this book, Pop Masculinities, I address the representation and reception of masculinity in pop music as a starting point for exploring the politics of gender in the early 21st century. Because pop music simultaneously reflects cultural norms and contributes to shaping them, it provides an arena wherein acceptable ways of enacting gender, sexuality, race, and other facets of identity are negotiated. This matter prompts critical examination of the many ways in which pop music is implicated in both challenging and maintaining gender discrimination, homophobia, misogyny, racism, and other systems of oppression that foster inequality. By investigating pop artists' masculine performances in light of intersectional gender politics, I endeavor to demonstrate how masculinity functions not only as a social location, but equally as a set of ideologies and practices that regulate the cultural distribution of power and social resources. Indeed, the staging of identity through pop music endorses certain ways of being in the world while concealing or sidelining others, thus intervening in the variety of subject positions that are made accessible and appealing to audiences. At the same time, pop performances frequently expand social repertoires by contesting or queering norms. Inquiring into the aesthetic and discursive dimensions of these processes through the lens of masculinity engenders critique of pop music's role in constricting and expanding possible ways of expressing and experiencing gender. What it means to be masculine is often taken for granted, even though the term is ill-defined and resistant to lucid description. I align myself with Raewyn Connell's intentional use of the plural form masculinities in order to circumvent essentialization and counteract any notion of a true masculinity assumed to proceed from men's bodies. This reflects a view of gender as enacted and performed in diverse and multifaceted ways, which decouples masculinity from biology. Masculinities are performed by women and non-binary people as well as by men, but this does not negate the fact that there are close cultural connections between masculine ideals and conceptions of what it entails to be a man. This latter point is exemplified by the persistent influence of traditional gender norms in defining the boundaries of acceptability that govern the performances of male pop artists. Even if such boundaries are frequently transgressed in the name of entertainment value or for ideological purposes, Pop Masculinities constitutes an effort to denaturalize the representations of masculinity that circulate in the pop domain. This can be achieved by unraveling the process by which masculinities become discernible at the intersections between sound recordings, music videos, live performances, artwork, interview statements, social media posts, and other elements that shape experiences of pop music. Surprisingly, pop has received relatively little attention from music scholars up until the 21st century. I write surprisingly because, notwithstanding the matter that the pop music is held as artistically and aesthetically inferior by its critics, the ubiquitous presence of pop artists in contemporary culture should suggest that their gender displays have enormous potential for impacting everyday life. The pop realm also represents a particularly rich area for studying gender. This is partly because gender identities are frequently made theatrical through pop texts, something that relates to the representational opportunities afforded by recording and production technologies. In other words, pop increases the perceptibility of the aesthetic mechanisms that produce gender. Moreover, because the stylistic hybridity that tends to characterize pop music introduces new connections between disparate culture and social spheres, pop performances give rise to a mosaic of potentially contradictory meanings that reflects the multiple, often conflicting dimensions of gendered experiences. I attempt in this book to highlight the ways in which pop artists' representations of masculinity operate ambiguously to simultaneously uphold and subvert gender norms. In order to explore the rich complexity of these dynamics, I approach the task of reading pop masculinities as a broad-based engagement with the aesthetics, ideologies, and power relations that factor into the negotiation of gender in pop music contexts. Reading pop masculinities. Across the humanities, reading is a term frequently used to describe the application of textual analysis and interpretation to contemplate issues of sociocultural significance. The multitude of diverse and sometimes diffuse approaches to reading have made many scholars regard the term with a certain amount of suspicion. Notwithstanding that reading and textuality might have fallen out of favor, as Alan Moore suggests, I aspire to the continued significance of interpretation as a primary concern of researching music and its entwinement with issues related to gender and identity. The interdisciplinary mode of inquiry I adopt situates my study within a terrain that intersects critical musicology, gender studies, and a range of other fields, thus allowing me to traverse a variety of scholarly perspectives while combining a close attention to detail with broad contextual consideration. For the purposes of this book, reading pop masculinities first and foremost involves mapping the multiple affordances of musical codes and audiovisual aesthetics against the discursive structures that mediate impressions of gender. Accordingly, I strive toward accounting for the various factors that add up to produce ideas about who an artist is. My artist-centered approach builds on my previous theorization of pop persona, which can be generally described as artists' public identities, as co-constructed on the production and reception ends of pop music. In pursuing a holistic understanding of the intertextual networks of meaning afforded by encounters between audiences and pop artists across numerous points of contact, I conceive of pop masculinities as amalgams of disparate but interrelated symbols and signs. In this regard, I am influenced by Stuart Hall's view that identities are never unified, but multiply constructed across different, often intersecting and antagonistic discourses, practices, and positions, on the one hand, and Stan Hawkins' insistence on the performative capacity of any musical expression on the other. Reading pop masculinities involves merging the interpretation of pop texts, songs, videos, artwork, persona, with discourse analysis and media ethnography in order to engage with the contradictions and tensions that result from the processes of performance, production, and reception that inform the politics of gender. I place particular importance on accounting for how the aesthetics of sound recordings and music videos shape impressions of pop artists in gendered, racial, and sexual terms, mapping my analyses against the meaningful narratives that emerge from the broader media discourse within which pop music circulates. Placing the multiple construction of artists' gender identities at the center of inquiry allows for some flexibility in navigating the myriad layers involved in interpreting any creative expression and aptly accommodates the complexity of masculinities as objects of study. This is a key strength of reading as a mode of investigation, given that it occupies itself with the significance of the particular in relation to overarching cultural and social concerns. Freya Jarman proposes that it is always in the specific that we can see the general, which is a salient point with regard to how the shifting trends and constant innovations of pop music, as well as the changeable terrain of human experience, are laid bare in the idiosyncratic attitudes and styles displayed by individual pop artists. I devote particular attention to five artists who collectively exemplify the multifaceted nature of pop masculinities in the early 21st century: Zayn, Lil Nas X, Justin Bieber, The Weeknd, and Take That, in order of appearance. The selection of artists implies that my definition of pop music is intentionally inclusive, encompassing the range of cultural and musical impulses that circulate in mainstream popular music culture. While all the artists I study in this book operate within the pop mainstream, their employment of music and visual codes draws on and blends many different recognizable styles associated with, for example, country music, EDM, gospel, hip-hop, R&B, and rock. This illustrates the matter that the boundaries between pop and other popular music spheres are unclear and permeable, which comes further to the fore in my discussions. In order to accommodate the stylistic plurality that characterizes pop music, I let my investigations be guided by research questions and theoretical frameworks that are tailored to the individual case studies. This facilitates inquiry into a number of issues that all, in differing ways, serve as points of entry for shedding a light on various connections between the negotiation of masculinity in pop music and wider socio-political concerns. Although each of the later chapters can be listened to as a standalone study, my treatment of these seemingly disparate cases within the confines of the book is intended to allow each of them to reveal something about the others, thus yielding a rich understanding of gender politics in pop music and beyond. Inevitably, focusing on a select few performers comes at the expense of overlooking others. The artists I study have been selected to cover diverse topics pertaining to the interdependencies of gender, sexuality, race, ethnicity, class, age, and other facets of identity. I willingly acknowledge that the diversity of masculinities in pop music exceeds what I am able to cover in this book. The increased global popularity of K-pop groups and the performance of masculinity by female or non-binary artists, such as Lady Gaga, Janelle Monáe, and Sam Smith, strike me as two themes that are ripe for further examination, even if they have fallen outside the scope of this book. My focus on cis male artists reflects an ambition to critically scrutinize the problematic ways in which pop aesthetics contribute to the naturalization of gender differences, as well as to shed further light on the representational strategies by which men contest naturalized notions of masculinity. I thus extend Ian Biddle and Freya Jarman's argument that the range of interfaces between men, masculinity, and popular music must be dealt with without seeking to avoid the problematic senses in which they operate, which should be seen as an attempt to further unearth the contestable and discursive nature of the purportedly irrefutable connection between men and masculinity. Determining the scope of and selecting material for any study of this kind is a subjective concern as much as a methodological one. Such a concern is intrinsic to interpretive approaches, where the personal experiences and competences of the analyst form part of the frame within which cultural phenomena are inspected. Far from attempting to uncover any objective truth about the songs, videos, or persona I study, I invite the listener of this book to partake in my navigation of the affordances emerging from the diversity of musical, visual, and social codes that flourishes in pop music. After all, the many possible interpretations of any given pop text confirm, as Moore argues, the necessarily individual experiential nature of our encounters from which we draw, from which we select, and from which we construct an understanding. This point highlights the subjective positioning of any academic and writer. My readings are shaped by a number of variables that include my age, ethnicity, geographical location, gender, theoretical positioning, and much more besides. As such, it is not given that others experience the songs, videos, or, indeed, masculine representations discussed in this book in the same way as I do. Yet, as Richard Elliott argues, critical and interdisciplinary approaches make it possible to imagine, if not empirically prove, the relationship between the experience of an individual listener and that of a larger community. With this in mind, my hope is that Pop Masculinities not only provides listeners with insights into my appraisals of how gender narratives are mobilized in pop music, but also impels them to contemplate the meaningful connections that underpin their own musical experiences. Overview of the book. I begin by connecting theoretical perspectives on the role of masculinity in maintaining gender hegemony to the aesthetic and discursive concerns that assume primacy in my discussions. Identifying the late 2010s as a period of supposed upheaval in gender politics, I outline reinvigorated aspiration for new masculinities following the emergence of the hashtag MeToo movement and tackle some of the tensions that arise from celebrating pop artists as harbingers of positive social change. The focus then shifts to issues concerning genre, style, and the co-negotiation of masculine and musical authenticity, which provide a platform for homing in on the cultural mechanisms that have subordinated male pop singers in relation to dominant ideals. The chapter ends with further reflections on the social politics of ascribing meaning to pop representations, which direct additional attention to the complicated relationships between artists and audiences. In Chapter 2, I detail Zane's fashioning of what I've conceptualized as post-boy band masculinity. His departure from One Direction instigated an extensive reconfiguration of his public identity, and the bulk of my investigation concerns the creation of discursive distance between his solo persona and his boy band past. The chapter opens with a thorough assessment of the prejudices that characterize boy bands as innocent, immature, and inauthentic. It is in response to such prejudices, I argue, that Zane's transformation was undertaken in a bid to authenticate his solo persona in both musical and masculine terms. This is achieved in the music video Pillow Talk, wherein a sonic alignment with rock idioms and the audiovisual construction of a seductive dreamscape largely maintain gender norms and affirm his heterosexual virility. At the same time, Zane's openness about mental health issues and his devotion to fashion have spurred descriptions of him as ushering in new ways of being masculine. This demonstrates the ambiguity that often arises from pop artists' articulation of identity across multiple channels, a topic that runs as a common thread throughout the book. One of the most widely discussed pop phenomena of the 2010s serves as my focal point in Chapter 3, as I turn my attention to Lil Nas X and his record-breaking hit Old Town Road. The song received immense attention in early 2019 after Billboard discreetly removed it from its Hot Country Songs chart, a decision that was interpreted by some as racially motivated. Against this backdrop, I investigate how Lil Nas X's musical eclecticism and queer iconography raise questions about the boundaries of inclusion and exclusion in the country and hip-hop genres. I critique the popular narrative that his widespread success following the Billboard incident is indicative of the declining authority of the music industry in the face of the democratizing effects of digital technologies. I then turn my attention to the official movie Old Town Road, in which Lil Nas X is joined by guest artist Billy Ray Cyrus. Of particular interest is the sonic styling of Lil Nas X's and Cyrus's personae, which prompts consideration of the aesthetic means by which
Sample complete. Ready to continue?